Today is Wednesday, February 22nd. We're going to be wrapping up the bones and skeletal system information today.
Okay, so on Monday we were talking about epiphyseal plates and epiphyseal lines. They're on the numbers 5 and 6 on page 65. So which one of these would you expect to see in a person who is still growing?
A plate.
Good. So it is sometimes called a growth plate. That's kind of just the general term for it, but we have a more specific name, and it's called an epiphyseal plate. The term epiphyseal gives you an idea of where it's located. Epiphyses are where on the bone? Bottom and top, yeah. They're the ends of your bone. So we should expect to see these plates on the ends of your bones, and they're important because they provide lengthwise growth for a growing person. So these are responsible for making your bones grow longer during your growing years. So I got a couple of these pictures. You'll notice that this is a very tight zone of hyaline cartilage. These hyaline cartilage cells must be growing and actively dividing in order for you to grow taller. In this picture, you may have noticed they've labeled a zone of ossification. That's going to be kind of what we talk about today. That zone is where bone formation occurs. And it's like a slow motion chase that takes place from the time that you're born until the time you hit your mid-teenage years. That zone is going to chase that line of cartilage, and eventually the line of cartilage is overrun by that zone of ossification. And by the time you're into your late teens, early 20s, we no longer have a region for bone growth. It's now called an epiphyseal what? It's a line, yeah. So we do see the line fully, completely calcified by the time we're in our mid-20s. It takes many years for calcification to be complete. But I just want to emphasize that the plate is evidence that we can still grow. The line, however, says, hey, we're done with bone growth. I know some of you all are interested in the radiology field, and I wanted to show you a picture of an x-ray or a radiograph because you can see those growth plates or epiphyseal plates in the ends of the bones. Kind of an interesting view here. It looks almost like the bones are broken, but they are in fact not broken here. You can see we've got the femur and the tibia, and right through the end is actually an epiphyseal plate of each bone. So it's actually a dark space, and that represents the layer of hyaline cartilage that goes through those bone ends. This really is a broken bone, and you can see that right through here is the epiphyseal plate. Let me hit the lights, maybe you get a better view of it. Right through here, you can see there's an interruption to that epiphyseal plate. It starts on one side, it finishes on the other, but that interruption there in the middle kind of tells us that we actually have a broken bone. So what does that mean for us if we break our epiphyseal plate? Is that good news or bad news?
Bad news.
Bad news. Because what may no longer happen there? You may be done growing in that plate, right. Now, there's actually kind of a silver lining to this problem. You do have an epiphyseal plate at each end of your long bone. So you do at least have a growing functional plate at the other end, but it would have to accommodate for the growth for the whole bone. And that may not be enough. If we're talking broken epiphyseal plates and legs, what may happen to your leg lengths?
I was about to say, what would happen if one leg broke another one, and one leg grew another?
You'd have a one leg long and one leg short.
Could you walk like that? That wouldn't mess up
here. You may need a lift on the shoe. Yeah.
Your day will be all back up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could cause back problems too from having that. Yeah. So sometimes, when parents take their kids to the pediatricians will monitor their growth, and they have a standardized growth chart that says your kid is in the 50th percentile, which means they're taller than 50% of kids at that age. Or they say they're in the 90th percentile, which means they're taller than 90% of the kids in that age group. Well, what we want to say is if you're in that lower end of the percentile, like maybe you're, say, only taller than 10% of the kids in that age group or 0% of the kids in that age group, maybe there's actually a growth problem. And one easy way to determine if that child still has an opportunity to grow is to x-ray the hand. You'll notice on the picture on the left, it looks like little areas separating the ends of the bone from the shaft, and those are the epiphyseal plates still intact. This is good news if you have a child who may be short for his or her age. This means there is still an opportunity to grow. Now, this is what we want to avoid. Notice the picture on the right shows no more growth plates. In fact, it just looks like pictures of bones. They did place arrows here to show us where the epiphyseal lines would be. So if you had a 12-year-old who was short for his age, which picture means that we still have opportunities for growth?
A.
Yeah, A. So we still have cartilage available. We can still grow longer. Now, if you happen to get the picture on the right for this 12-year-old, what does that mean?
They just don't age it.
That they're done growing. So that case there means that we no longer can provide lengthening of the bones. So that is, in fact, what they'll do. They'll x-ray the hand. There's, you know, not vital organs associated with your hand. And they'll watch and monitor to see if there's opportunities for bone growth with those plates. Do you know what might happen if we gave growth hormone injections to a child who has plates still available? You know what growth hormone does?
Makes you grow.
Makes you grow, right? So this would encourage those growth plates to divide and lengthen. Do you know what would happen if we gave growth hormone to this person who has epiphyseal lines? Widening, yes. So no lengthening would take place. In fact, the widening would occur in that bone. So we're going to talk about those kinds of things on the coming pages. So any questions on page 65? That's kind of the last little bit I wanted to wrap up with you.
So the plate and the cartilage, I mean, is either one of them acceptable, or it's got to be a plate, right?
It's technically a plate, like a layer, you might say, but epiphyseal cartilage references the same thing. So here's two side by side. Can you tell me which picture represents epiphyseal plates?
Right.
Yeah, how do you know this one has plates?
A little bit of space.
Yeah, there's some dark space in there, okay? And that's the layer of hyaline cartilage that divides and produces lengthening of the bone. The picture on the left, can you see the epiphyseal lines? Okay, so it looks like a shadow of bone through the ends, and that means that the bone lengthening process is done. So which one of these pictures represents a person, say, under age 18?
Right.
The one on the right. The picture on the left, this person must be at least how old? Probably over 21, yeah. So it kind of gives us an idea for ages if we can locate those epiphyseal plates in the bones. So since we've talked a little bit about the preliminary information, let me take you on over to page 66. And we're going to talk about bone types, and then we're going to talk about the actual process of bone growth. Okay, with lights off, is it too dark for you? Okay, it gives us better contrast, it seems, up here for the PowerPoint. Okay, so two types of bone are our next topic. You know, when you're in lab studying bone types, the only one you've been studying is called compact bone. It's otherwise known as osseous bone or osseous tissue. That, by the way, is your first blank up there. First blank up there is actually osteocytes. Yeah, that first blank up there is osteocytes. Okay, so let me take you back for just a moment. There are two types of bone. There's compact bone, which you've studied in lab. And there's also another bone tissue type called spongy bone, or otherwise called cancellous or cancellous bone. That type of bone is one that you don't study in lab. It's a more porous or spongy bone, like the name implies. We're going to focus first on compact bone because it provides a very strong type of bone for the outer covering and along the shaft of our bones. This is a cut through some bones. You may recognize these. Okay? So you've got a very thin layer of compact on the outside, and then inside you've got a ton of spongy bone here. You'll notice the spongy bone, like the name implies, has a lot of open air spaces, and it's great for being a shock absorber and allowing for friction in joints, which we've got right here, you know, with a joint. So here's more spongy bone that's exposed. And again, that should not normally be what's exposed. It's very prickly and needle-like. You don't want that exposed to your connective tissues. It would literally stick like needles into your connective tissue. That'd be very painful. What should be covering that on the outside is a very smooth layer of compact bone. So that's what we expect to see in, under normal conditions, covering over that. You know, in class on Monday, I brought the real bone and a plastic bone to class, and you could see the difference because some of those real bones had wear and tear on them. It doesn't take a whole lot of wear and tear to erode away the compact bone and reveal that underlying spongy bone tissue. Something as simple as dropping it on your tabletop could knock off that layer of compact bone. So that's why we really avoid using them in lab nowadays. We tend to use the plastic bones because they're a lot more durable if you drop them on tables or floors. Okay, so we're back full circle. Number one there on the top of your page, osteocytes are mature bone cells. So back, way back when we talked about connective tissue types, we know that there were sites, blast, and clast. We know that sites are mature cells, and they're no longer able to either build new bone tissue or tear it down. So they're just kind of like the retirement residents sitting within the bone tissue, and they're just metabolizing and doing their daily activities. You'll notice that they are, in fact, trapped here in the bone tissue, so it's really hard for them to do anything because they're sealed in that bone matrix. Number two there says the blank of bone tissue is made up of calcium salts. What's that blank? What do all connective tissues have? A non-living matrix. Good. Number two is the matrix. Number two is the matrix. Okay. Number one is osteocytes. Number two is matrix. Let's talk about what a matrix is. Back when we covered connective tissues, we said that all connective tissue had a matrix. It is non-living. It's made by the cells in that particular tissue type. In this picture, we've blocked off one of those osteocytes. It is embedded within a non-living matrix. All of this white stuff that you see here is calcium and phosphate groups. That builds the structure, you might say, of our compact bone tissue. So most of what is in bone tissue or compact bone tissue is in fact a non-living source that we get from dairy products like milk and cheese. So that non-living matrix is not actually something that you make yourself. You just extract it from your food and you deposit it here into this bone tissue. How about questions so far? Okay, under number two, you've got A, B, and C. So let's talk about the components of the matrix of our bone tissue. You'll notice the most common thing that we find in our bone tissue is calcium phosphate crystals. They make up around 2/3 of your bone's weight. So where do you get calcium from? Milk, yeah, get it from your diet, right? Dairy products like milk and cheese, those are going to give you adequate calcium to build the matrix of your bone. Read along there with me. Notice the word in italics called hydroxyapatite. That is the crystalline form that those calcium phosphate crystals take on. Funky one, hydroxyapatite.
Do we have to know that?
I would know that it's just the crystalline form of those calcium phosphate molecules.
That hydroxy, whatever.
Yeah, hydroxyapatite.
Can you said no to the those things. They make up.
No hydroxyapatite or the crystalline form of calcium phosphates. Okay. So let's take a look at this picture, because this is a very high magnified piece of compact bone tissue. You've got rings of matrix here. These rings are formed of those calcium phosphate crystals called hydroxyapatite. So that's what we're actually seeing here, these rings and rings. By the way, the rings themselves have a specific name. They're called lamellae or lamellae. And so when you're looking at this, it looks to be almost like the cut of a tree. You've got ring upon ring. And that's in fact how our bone tissue grows, is by laying down additional rings, just like a tree would grow. So specifically, these rings of hydroxyapatite crystals, they're called lamellae or lamellae. I don't know how much you guys grocery shop, but if you happen to be in Walmart, and I mention that specifically because I've seen them in there, there are oxtails for sale in the meat department. And even if you don't want to cook them and purchase them, go take a look at them, because they're fantastic for showing you macroscopic lamellae. So when they cut those oxtails, they actually got ring upon ring, almost like a tiered wedding cake. And it's very cool to be able to see without a microscope how those rings actually build in more of a gross or macroscopic view. So grocery store sign, the next time you're out shopping, is look for the oxtails. That's probably the best place to be able to see a macro view of those rings. Okay. Notice letter B are collagen fibers. These are meant to provide flexibility but strength to your bone tissue. Okay, and you'll notice that they form about 1/3 of your bone's weight. So let me explain the relationship here. Those hydroxyapatite crystals are brittle. They're just like chalk. So if you left them by themselves in your bone tissue, you could not put your body's weight on them for them breaking and crumbling. Now, if you combine the hydroxyapatite crystals with collagen fibers, the collagen gives you the flexible strength that you need. So you have to have both the crystals and the collagen fibers to have bone work properly. If you happen to have not enough collagen fibers, we may develop a disease called brittle bone disease. You may have heard of that one before. Bones break very easily. That's due to inadequate or some problem with collagen formation. So think about it the other way. What happens to bones if you have plenty of collagen and not enough hydroxyapatite crystals?
Probably have like a sponge bone that's not going to be in yours.
Too flexible. Yeah, very rubbery, very flexible, not strong enough, so bones that may actually bend under your body's weight. So you've got to have the balance there, 2/3 crystals, 1/3 collagen, to give you the right amount of strength combined with the right amount of flexibility. So bone diseases actually can arise if you don't have the right balance of those two products. You'll notice that cells do make up around 2% of your bone's weight, so they're a small contribution, but nonetheless, they're really important in bone remodeling. Bone growing, bone deposition requires osteoblasts and even osteoclasts to make that work. How about questions so far on all these new terms? Let's talk about number 3 with the various canals in your bone. Let's see. These are osteocytes. They are, of course, embedded in little air pockets called lacuna. You probably remember that word from back in histology. That air pocket is basically just a little opening inside your bone tissue where that osteocyte resides. You'll notice that these osteocytes sitting here and here are connected to each other by a set of canals. And these very small canals are called canaliculi for very small canal. That's the translation for that term. Okay? So canaliculi directly connect one osteocyte to another, and they connect those osteocytes back to a central canal. So why do they need to be connected back to the central canal?
Nutrients,
yeah. Got to pick up the blood supply, got to pick up nutrients and oxygen. So these canaliculi, looking big picture here, are also connected back to the central canal, which is on the left side of this picture. These things that look like strands of hair running through the bone are in fact those canaliculi. So in reality, they look like radiating spokes of a tire. They're going to radiate out from the center of your central canal. They're going to hit these osteocytes, carry nutrients, oxygen to them, and then they keep on traveling to the next and so forth. So these are all canaliculi. These, in fact, are all canaliculi.
So the purpose of those is for nutrients?
Nutrients, that's right. Speaking of the central canal, let's talk about that one next. This hole in the middle of this set of lamellae, right here, that is home to a blood vessel or nerve, and that's going to take blood supply all throughout your bone tissue. That's right, around. Yeah, just like spokes. That's right. So these are your lamellae going around, and these little tiny but hardly visible lines, those are your canaliculi. And the dark spots, do you guys notice what those are? Osteocytes, right. So canaliculi pick up blood from this blood vessel in the central canal. They travel through the bone lamellae, and then they take that blood out here to these osteocytes. All right, so when we're thinking big picture, we're thinking about one unit of a central canal, the lamellae rings around it, the bone matrix, and the osteocytes forming letter C. Now notice that letter B is called a Habergian system. Last part of that sentence. The set up here, all of this whole thing, the central canal, the surrounding rings, the matrix, the bone cells, this entire thing is called a Habergian system. Okay. So what I'd like to do is use the space down below, and let's start drawing this so you have a picture to take home with you. I'm going to draw one osteon or Habergian system. We're going to start in the center with a central canal, and that central canal is home to either a blood vessel or a nerve. The first thing we're going to do is put some rings around the central canal, and those rings are called what? Lamellae. Good. Those rings are called lamellae. Okay, so those rings are called lamellae. I don't know, does that help or?
Did you say the central canal is kind of the blood vessel or nerve?
Or nerve, yeah. Or nerve, yeah.
The central canal.
Central canal is, yeah.
Glad you wrote that.
That's good. Good to do this then, right? Okay. I'm going to stick a few osteocytes up here. We know from our earlier studies with histology that they are trapped in air pockets. Those air pockets are lacuna. We've got our osteocytes drawn in. They're in their little air pockets called lacuna. Let's attach them to each other and back to the central canal using teeny tiny little canals called what?
Canaliculi.
Yeah. Doesn't sound very nice, does it? Okay, so canaliculi are going to attach those osteocytes to each other and then back to that central canal. So I'm just going to draw some radiating lines coming out from the center. This looks like a bloodshot eye, doesn't it? pass to the lacuna, and then they'll continue on the other side. This is an image of an osteon, otherwise known as a haversian system. It is a unit of compact bone. That is the very smooth bone that found covering outsides of all your bones. Every bone surface has this compact bone on the outside.
So this whole thing is the osteon.
That's right, whole thing is the osteon. Stuff after people, so they're trying to not say perversion system, they're trying to say osteon. I'll try to give you both, and if I don't, you can ask. You're welcome to ask. So I'm trying to use the more conventional terming on here, which is central canal. You may have learned it as haversian canal, and then this whole picture is an osteon. The alternate name for it is haversian system. So you're welcome to use it by either name, and if I forget to put both on the test, you're welcome to ask me for clarification. Okay. Does that kind of help you see how this is working a little easier? Okay.
So the test, you have a picture and say identify the system, or?
I would block it off. I'd give you like maybe a cell, and I'd say, what's the cell? Or I'd say, what's this whole thing called?
I'll try identify the picture.
Yeah, well, I'll try to be specific and say, identify this unit of whatever all this is. Yeah, and there'll be a bracket around it. You'll notice there's a third type of canal there, and that is letter C. That one's perforating or Volkmann's canals. There's, again, somebody's name. So, you know, back in the day, if you discovered it, you got to slap your name on it, you thought you had your, you know, you're famous now forever and ever. But nowadays, we're trying to get away from that because who the heck knows what Volkmann is? So we're trying to name it what it really is, and it's a perforating canal that connects two central canals together. So I'm going to draw another osteon sitting over here to the right. Okay. And it's a connector between this central canal and that central canal. This perforating canal connects two osteons together. Messages, nerves, so any kind of connection, communication-wise, that you need with neighboring osteons, that's what's going to travel through. This is kind of a hard concept to appreciate, so I'd like to show you something that you may have seen before. I'm thinking of driving in Myrtle Beach. I'm hoping that you've been to Myrtle Beach before and seen all those high-rises, and some of those buildings are mind-blowing because there'll be a high-rise on the ocean front, and then there's a high-rise on this side of the road. And then you look up and you think, dang, there's a bridge going across. And you think, boy, if the wind blew really hard, you've got a problem up there. Mm-hmm. So these high rises that run the length of the bone are actually our central canals. And the type of connector that bridge makes is what kind of canal? That's a perforating canal. And if you were to go inside the high rise, you know, there's hallways to all those various rooms in there. And those teeny tiny little hallways to everybody's room, those are canaliculi. Okay? So they're little hallways that take you straight to one individual room, or in the case here, to one individual bony cell. So I hope that kind of gives you more of an idea how this works. These central canals literally do run just like a high rise, the length of your bone, and the perforating canals work just like a bridge by connecting two central canals together. I've actually got a picture to show you. There's a perforating canal, and here's some. It looks kind of like a tear or a rip between two central canals. That's that perforating canal there. And in reality, when you go back to low magnification, this is what bone tissue looks like. You know, we were working so up close, it's hard to get a picture of the forest for the trees, but every one of these red spots in the center is a central canal, home to a blood vessel or nerve. And you can kind of get the sense of the ring formation around every one of those central canals. So the central canal, its rings, the osteocytes, that is a unit known as what? Osteon. Yeah, that unit is an osteon. So you've actually got, looks like, several dozen osteon units in this picture here alone. Can I help clarify any part of this? Any bone network structures, any canals, anything you're having difficulty with? Does this make pretty good sense? Okay. Let's turn our attention to the very bottom of your page. This is a different bone tissue type. It's the one found inside of our bones called spongy or cancellous bone. And it has these bony crossbars called trabeculae. Okay, so these bony crossbars are called trabeculae. And that's your blank down there. So that looks like a very porous or spongy bone, which of course is where the name came from. But there's also spaces in there for bone marrow to reside. If we happen to have yellow bone marrow, what's the function of it?
Store fat.
Store fat. And if it's red bone marrow, the function is? Blood cell production. Good. So you're going to have a lot of bone marrow in that cavity space. Page 68, talk about ossification there. We're going to erase our bone picture. Does anyone need this? Okay. Maybe I'm going to erase it. Three ways that bones grow. Bones can grow intramembranously, which is how your facial bones fuse together. Bones can also grow endochondrally, which is how our bones get longer. And bones can also grow appositionally, which means that they grow in width. So that is something that can take place throughout your entire lifetime. Intramembranous growth and endochondral ossification should stop by the time you reach your final growing years, sometime in the mid-teenage years. But appositional growth can occur throughout your entire life. That's how bones grow wider in response to your diet, which may be high in calcium, or in response to exercise, Anytime you stress your bones, they respond by depositing extra calcium to provide strength for that bone. So I'm only going to detail one of these. We're only going to work through endochondral ossification in any detail. We'll just go a little bit into detail with appositional, but the main one we want to focus on is endochondral ossification. So what we've got here is basically how bones form in a fetus and how they grow throughout our childhood years and into our teenage years. So what I'd like to focus on are some things that happen at those epiphyseal plates, and also to understand how that mirror cavity inside gets opened up. So those are some things we really want to look at. Okay, so with step one, you'll notice that we're working with a hyaline cartilage model in a fetus. So all babies start life with a skeleton that is entirely made of cartilage. You've got to start somewhere, right? So that cartilage is eventually going to be calcified thanks to bone-forming cells known as what?
Osteoblasts,
good. And so those osteoblasts will eventually lay down a periosteum, which is found where? On the outside, right on the shaft, okay? So we eventually lay down a periosteum, and then now we're good to go. We can start depositing more and more calcium to that bone. So that's taken care of in step one. In step two, you'll notice that we have a primary ossification center. That primary ossification center actually begins in the middle of your bone. But keep in mind, when a fetus is very early on in development, the entire baby's body may be no longer than just a few inches long. So we're talking about itty-bitty bones that are still made up mostly of cartilage, and the primary ossification center, the first place bone growth occurs, is here in the very center of the diaphysis. You know that's not right. Where does bone growth really take place?
In the
plate. Yeah, and the ends and the plates. So what starts there originally in the middle of the shaft splits and then moves toward either end and takes up residence as a secondary ossification center here on the ends of that bone. So ultimately, we see that primary ossification center split and migrate to either end of the bone. But keep in mind, we're dealing with a fetus that may have a body no longer than a couple of inches in length. So this is way early on in fetal development. Okay. When those centers migrate, when the primary center migrates to either end, we start having cartilage laid down in the epiphyseal plates at the end. Those areas are going to be ossified or turned into bone. So that kind of takes us to step three. Let me tie in the lysosomes, osteoclast, and then step three all together. So let's take a look at just some epiphysis of some bone. Let's lay down an epiphyseal plate. Okay, and it's made up of what type of material? Hyaline cartilage. Good, so we'll just put that there as a reminder. So we now have created our secondary ossification center on the ends. So thinking back to our study of tissues, tell me what you know about the reproduction rate in cartilage. Really slow. So slow that it takes you from the time that you're born at approximately 20 inches in length to grow 5 or 6 feet in height. That is how slow it takes those cells to divide. Many, many years for those cells to actively divide. So these hyaline cartilage cells in your epiphyseal plate are actively dividing even before you're born, and laying right behind it are a bunch of osteoblasts. And what do osteoblasts do for a living? Build bone, okay? And that bone building process is called ossification. Okay? This is the second site of ossification because reality-wise, the primary center started out life down here somewhere along that shaft.
So the ossification, you said, is the building portion of the
bone building portion. Ossification center wasn't my black dotted line down there, but when that bone got longer, it split and then it came up this way. So that's where it used to be back when the bone was like really, really tiny, but it got separated and one ossification center went to each end of your bone, and now it's called a secondary ossification center. Okay. So here goes the steamrolling process. That layer of hyaline cartilage is going to actively divide before you're born, through your childhood years, and through your teenage years. And as it actively divides, it's going to push further and further in this direction toward the end of your bone.
So the building portion of the process is what pushes that plate?
Exactly. Coming right along behind it are those osteoblasts. And those osteoblasts are going to start putting bone down in this area. I have this mental image of a slow motion chase. Those hyaline cartilage cells are pushing ever so slowly, making that bone get longer. And then coming right behind them is a slow motion chase of those osteoblasts placing down bone. They're actually calcifying that bone. So over time, we're going to continue lengthening this bone. Those hyaline cartilage cells continue to actively divide. This bone gets pushed longer and longer. And coming right behind is a layer of osteoblast. They're depositing down calcium, chasing right behind that hyaline cartilage layer. Does this make sense so far? Okay.
Basically, it's like bricklaying.
It is like bricklaying, yeah. Now, there's a catch, because as you lengthen this bone, you're actually going to have osteoclast and lysosomes come along and remodel the interior. So there's some dead cartilage that's left behind through this ossification activity. That dead cartilage is removed and remodeled away by osteoclasts and lysosomes, which we know as recycling organelles. So when you start looking at a bone that's fairly old, you've got this hollow space on the inside. That hollow space is home to our marrow cavity, thanks to the activity of osteoclasts and lysosomes remodeling the interior. So let's flash forward to the day a baby is born. When babies are born, this cartilage that makes up the majority of the bone has been calcified by osteoblast, and the only cartilage that remains is this epiphyseal plate that's actively dividing, and then a layer of articular cartilage covering the epiphyses on the outside. We know that kids have more rubbery bones than adults do, and that's because the cartilage conversion to bone process hasn't completely finished. But by the time they reach the end of their teenage years, that calcification or hardening process should be complete. So let's fast forward to the time that we're in the late teenage years. you got?
The lysosomes?
Yeah.
They basically are cleaning up after all the cartilage is being pulled back.
Yeah, it's cleaning up crude. They migrate along behind that ossification center and even ingest dead stuff.
And the osteoclast.
And the osteoclast, yeah. They're remodeling while the lysosomes are your cleanup crude.
So nothing that we really specifically need to know about either one of those other than the fact that they come after the growth?
They come after, and they're responsible for making that marrow cavity a hollow space inside the bone. So let's flash forward to the middle teenage years when puberty is raging and hormones are coursing through the bloodstream. We know that sex hormones tell that epiphyseal plate, hurry, hurry, because the end is near, right? So that epiphyseal plate says, I'm going as fast as I can. And you may grow like 6 inches in that year. You know, there's that time where you have that massive growth spurt. And so that epiphyseal plate's doing it as fast as it can. It's dividing and pushing and making that bone grow longer. And following right behind is that layer of osteoblast. So those sex hormones say, hurry, hurry, it's almost done. And so we eventually have no more bone division at that, or more, no more cartilage division, I should say, at that epiphyseal plate. When that epiphyseal plate begins to slow down, who's going to catch up? Osteoblast, yeah. They're going to catch up. And of course, when they catch up, they're going to run right over the top of that epiphyseal plate. And when they run over the top of the epiphyseal plate, they start to calcify it. And now you're, say, 18 years old, and you no longer can have active division of that hyaline cartilage. By the time you're 21 and then 25, these osteoblasts have completely overrun that epiphyseal plate. And now if we x-ray your bone, we don't even see it anymore. Instead, what do we see?
A line.
A line, yeah. So even though those osteoblasts will run the heck out of that epiphyseal plate in your middle teenage years, it takes until you're around age 25 to have complete ossification, which is bone growth in that line region. So you're not going to grow anymore at age 25. It's certainly not taller at age 25. But it takes that long for that process to completely convert to hardened, calcified bone tissue.
Is that like just all growth in your body until you're
25? The only place where you need...
I just mean like, I don't know, like in your eyes, they say your eyes are going to change your life until you're 25. I just didn't know it was like your whole body.
Your whole body, yeah. The only thing that we tend to lose plasticity with the central nervous system in that mid-teenage years, but even the brain still is developing until the mid-20s.
Yeah.
Kind of sad when you think about back in the day when somebody lived like 40 years, they hardly reached physical maturity before they died.
Yeah. So 25 ossification finally finishes.
Finishes, yeah. You're completed, there's a line in place, and it's done. Sure.
Okay, so does the epiphyseal plate itself, does the whole thing move and close in, or does it just move? Does it just close in? You know what I mean? Like it looks like the plate itself is moving, I guess, as the bone is getting longer, or is it closing in?
I gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
This layer is constantly dividing, and the back end layer is constantly being overrun by osteoblasts.
Right.
So eventually, when you're, say, late teens, early 20s, this layer at this leading edge is no longer actively dividing, and the back end where the osteoblasts are coming literally plow over that, and then just it's just done because it's going to overrun and ossify that remaining cartilage. So it's not that the whole plate's moving forward, it's that you have a leading edge that's actively dividing and keeps pushing further and further out. This picture may help too, because this is all actively dividing cartilage. This is the edge up here that's kind of just resting, but you've got a growth plate through here, and that's the area that's actively dividing and pushing the plate further and further toward the end. And then down here at the other end, you've got calcification that takes place, and that's where those osteoblasts are really starting to deposit calcium and push up toward that hyaline cartilage layer. So bricklaying, steamroller, those are good ways to think of this process, but any way you look at it, mid-teens to early 20s, it's done. How about questions on this process of endochondral ossification? So you see a plate that tells us what about the age of this person?
They're young and still growing.
Young and still growing, right. So this leading edge up here on the top is where the new cartilage cells are made, and the back end edge here is where osteoblasts sit and turn that into calcified, hardened bone. So it's like a slow motion chase going and pushing your bone longer and longer. All right, we talked about that. Just a little bit there about appositional growth. Appositional is bone growth in width. And you can see in this picture, the bone, in fact, does get wider. And that occurs at the outermost periosteum. So appositional growth can occur at any time during your lifetime. In fact, diet and exercise can influence appositional growth. They even tell people in their 70s and 80s who are at risk for bone disease, hey, pick up some weights and do weightlifting. And that weightlifting stresses the bones, and the bones will grow wider and appositionally, which makes them stronger and more resistant to breakage. So, you know, you see a 70 or 80 year old working out with some weights, just be in admiration that they got a strong, healthy skeleton, right?
That's all I'm gonna do with
it. Yeah, lift weights in your old age, that's the way to go. All right, how about questions on that page? We've talked a little bit about hormones already. A couple of these are going to be new for us. At the very top of your page there, number one is a hormone called parathyroid hormone. On top of page 69, and number one is parathyroid hormone. This particular hormone raises blood calcium levels. Now, it's produced by a gland in your neck called the parathyroid glands, and that gland is stimulated when there's low calcium levels in your bloodstream. Let me give you one example of when it's really active. For a mom who breastfeeds her baby, mom's breast milk contains calcium to help the baby's skeleton grow. Where does mom get the calcium from? Her bones, yeah. So there's an old saying that goes, for every child a tooth is lost. Sometimes breastfeeding moms or pregnant moms lose teeth. Sometimes they have cavities. And sometimes those teeth, you know, just are more brittle, maybe more likely to fracture or crack if they're chewing food. So that brittleness in the bones comes from PTH leaching calcium from wherever it can get it. Do you think osteoclast or blast are active when PTH is in the bloodstream?
Blast. Destruction.
Blast, it's destruction, exactly. The antagonist hormone, or the one that works against PTH, is called number 2, calcitonin. This particular hormone will lower blood calcium levels. If you like to eat a lot of leafy green vegetables that are high in calcium, or if you like to eat, say, dairy products like milks and cheese, those contain calcium that osteoblasts in turn deposit to your bones.
That it lowers the calcium.
Lowers calcium levels, yeah. Do catch the wording here. PTH raises blood calcium levels. It responds to low blood calcium. But calcitonin lowers blood calcium. It responds to high blood calcium levels. So it depends on how you say it. You cut the word low in there sometimes. Sometimes you have the word high in there. So you'll want to think about how these two hormones work antagonistically, which means how they work opposite to each other. Number 3 is growth hormone. I don't think there's much explanation for that one, right? Growth hormone makes you grow. If you've got too much of it, you have a condition known as gigantism. That means that during your childhood growing years, you had excess growth hormone. Those epiphyseal plates then respond by elongating. So someone who's a giant, maybe upper 6-foot range, 7 foot, 8 foot, 9 foot, there have been records throughout history of people being 12, 14 feet tall. That's just incredibly tall and puts a lot of stress and pressure on those joints. The most recent giant, the tallest one that we've had on record, is this guy here. He was 8 foot 11 inches, and at age 22, when he passed away from a blister, good gosh, a blister, right? The blister got infected, killed him. 2 weeks later, he was in the ground. But unfortunately, at age 22, he was not done growing. He had not passed through puberty. So what would puberty have done to his epiphyseal plates?
Maybe
one last growth spurt, and then it would have been overrun with those osteoblasts. And so that would have been the saving grace for slowing down his bone growth and hopefully making him stop growing. This is his dad in this picture here. And if you happen to go to Myrtle Beach down there at the main portion where Ripley's, believe it or not, is located, they have a wax statue of him by the street. You don't have to pay to go in to see it. It's enormous. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, well, here's a couple more. This is our tallest currently alive man. 8'3" is still pretty enormous. You'll notice he's got a cane even though he's in his late 30s. That's because gigantism is actually a rather crippling disease. Imagine 450 pounds spread over 8 foot of body size on normally structured joints. The joints just can't withstand the weight. Yao Ming is another with gigantism. You may have followed his basketball career and known that he was plagued by joint issues. He finally retired. He's still around, but you know, his body just couldn't handle all the weight being 7'6". Some of our tallest women are in the upper 7 foot, lower 8 foot range. This lady was in her 40s when she passed away. She was also crippled like most people with gigantism are. Now, if you happen to go through puberty, you're lucky because then your growth plates stop growing and you no longer grow taller. Okay? Now, here's the catch. If you continue to have excess amounts of growth hormone, your bones don't grow longer, they grow
wider.
And what kind of growth is that?
Appositional,
yeah. And it's called, you're right, acromegaly. Literally translated, it's enlargement of the extremities. What's that? It's more than that. It's that all of your bones, your face, your arms, your legs, everything just get wider. I know some people have very delicate bones. Some people are big boned, but this is more trouble. It's really more troublesome, especially in the face. So this guy has acromegaly. You may have noticed that Yao Ming doesn't really look like he has acromegaly. You're not going to really notice it in the humerus or femur because there's a lot of tissue around those areas, but you're going to notice it in the facial features, hands and feet, where there's a lack of a lot of bone tissue or rather surrounding connective tissues. This guy looks fairly normal, maybe late teens, early 20s, but notice how the excess bone growth in his face has completely changed his features.
Andre the Giant was like that.
Andre the Giant was like that, yeah. Oh, what a wonderful lead-in, right? Yep. So he had gigantism and he had acromegaly. On the other end of the spectrum, we have pituitary dwarfism, and in this picture, these two people are pituitary dwarfs. They simply look like they have child-sized bodies, and that's due to a lack of growth hormone during those growing years. Okay, let's talk about the next hormone, which is calcitriol. You may know it better as vitamin D3. So we already know a little bit about vitamin D. How can you make it all by yourself?
Sunlight.
Sunlight, right. So sun is, of course, important for making vitamin D. Where else can you get vitamin D from?
Milk.
Yeah, dairy products like milk contain vitamin D. So if you don't get enough sunlight and you do have a diet rich in vitamin D, that helps us to make an active hormone called calcitriol. So you'll notice that calcitriol is one that helps to regulate calcium and phosphorus metabolism for your bones. You remember that word, right? Hydroxyapatite. Sounds like hydroxycut or something. So hydroxyapatite is actually regulated by calcitriol. So the deposition of calcium and phosphate is regulated by calcitriol. I did want to mention a problem with calcitriol. If you don't have enough vitamin D3, as an adult, you can develop a condition known as osteomalacia. You know, we just got through talking about this. You've got to have the balance between the hard calcified salts and the collagen fibers for flexibility. If you don't have enough hard calcified salts, you develop a condition called osteomalacia. Literally translated, what does that mean? Bone softening. Yes, soft bones or bone softening. So in this case, bones are soft. They tend to fracture under the body's weight. Okay, so the cause of osteomalacia is a vitamin D deficiency. Bones are affected as being soft and easily fractured. Older populations are more susceptible. So, what age group is affected? Older populations. You know, nowadays they're recommending vitamin D3 for a lot of older people. They'll run a blood test, determine that their vitamin D is deficient, and then of course they can prescribe a vitamin D supplement to help them out.
Osteoporosis hits the older generation as well.
Exactly, yep.
Just in general, we're pretty much screwed.
The older you get, yeah, the more downhill it goes. Yeah. Rickets and osteomalacia are really the same issue. It's just an age difference. So rickets affects younger populations. It's still a vitamin D deficiency.
That's the cause of it, vitamin D deficiency.
That's right. Vitamin D deficiency is your cause. Bones are affected by being soft and easily fractured. And children tend to be the ones mostly susceptible.
Same thing, just different name for age group.
Exactly, yeah. So you say, why can't we just put a kid with rickets in the sun? Well, it may be that they have a metabolism disorder, so it may not be simply a lack of vitamin D. It may be that their body doesn't know how to use it to activate hydroxyapatite deposition to the bones. So I did want to show you a picture of a person with rickets.
How do you treat it?
Nowadays, they just try to make sure the legs don't bow unnecessarily, because if there's a metabolism disorder, there's not a lot they can do for that. Maybe supplements, but if the body doesn't know how to use it, then that's really the underlying. Yeah.
Could that happen though, as it's developing in the mother? I mean, is that why some kids come out, they literally go almost straight into, is that like a pelvis cast? I mean, their legs and everything come in a cast and they're like newborns.
Yeah, and that can come, you're right, from birth. Yeah. So bowed legs, I don't mean to imply that anybody with bowed legs has or had rickets, but it is a common feature of rickets because the bones are soft. They do tend to bow under the body's weight. So that's what we're looking at with this condition. Apparently it must run in families. If these women were all families, maybe sister of the same family, maybe it happened to be something that was in that particular genetic line, or if it was a actual deficiency, maybe they weren't getting enough vitamin D. Being naked, I would think they'd get enough sunlight. So, okay. Just a couple more left on this page. Thyroid is necessary for bone growth. Okay, and sex hormones are also contributing to the end of bone growth. So once you hit puberty, goodbye to your lengthening process. You may have one last growth spurt and that'll be it. And then, of course, exercise is important for stressing bones. Bones respond by depositing more calcium. So how do bones respond to stress? They deposit more calcium. Exercise is necessary to keep bones strong and healthy. Exercise is necessary to keep bones strong. Now, bones that are in a cast are going to lose bone mass. They will actually shrink in size, and that means that there's less calcium held in those bones. So it's not just that they shrink in size, they're no longer as strong as what they used to be. So think about this. If you wear a cast to help a bone that's been broken heal, you're actually not doing it a whole lot of good because it's not exercised and used, and therefore it may be more susceptible to a break since it's been weakened and made smaller in size. So the next question there, what happens to bones that aren't exercised? They lose bone mass. They add more calcium. Yeah, they deposit or add more calcium. Last blank down there for osteoporosis. This is kind of like osteomalacia, but it's got a sex hormone component to it. We know that osteoporosis affects older people more than younger people, women more than men, and it tends to affect Caucasian and Asian populations more as well. So it's not just that we've lost bone mass and perhaps the bone is more brittle. Most women who have gone through menopause are now at a higher risk for this because of the lack of sex hormones. So those sex hormones play a component here too.
So the answer is just loss of sex hormones.
Yeah, loss of sex hormones and bones are more brittle. Older population and women, yeah. Since we're running short on time, let me just tell you about page 71. If I remember correctly, there is one question from that page on the test, and it has to do with the type of fractures at the bottom of the page. So you're going to want to look at things like green stick, which are commonly found in kids. Compression fractures are common in osteoporosis because, hey, the bone's brittle. It just kind of cracks and compresses like a stack of broken plates. And there's the spiral fractures are common in bone injuries, or sports injuries, rather, from being twisted. So if I remember correctly, there's only one question from that page, and if I'm remembering right, it's that very bottom list of fractures. So I know we don't have a lot of time, but if you have any questions, I'll be happy to stick around after class. You're welcome to come see me on main campus tomorrow or Friday. Good luck studying.